Welcome to iGrad's College Admin Podcast, bringing you interviews with key trendsetters in financial aid and financial literacy with your host, Chris Alban.
So, hi, this is Chris Alban. Thanks for joining us. I have Heather Jarvis here with me. How are you doing, Heather?
I'm great, thanks. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Heather Jarvis, for those of you that don't know, is a former capital defense attorney that has her own law school debt story that I'm sure she'll share with us. And currently, she dedicates her expertise to helping student loan borrowers make better decisions. She specializes in training for high debt borrowers, but also does some stuff for financial aid administrators as well. And she has contributed to student debt relief policy for the House Education Committee and others in Congress. And she spent several years advocating for public service loan forgiveness. You can actually check out her website at heatherjarvis.com. And we at iGrad have done some work with Heather as well on some webinars, some different pieces, articles. And what I have really found is that, Heather, you seem to be, from what I can find, the biggest expert on public service loan forgiveness, but also I would say the IBR and the new payment plan as well. What is it, pay as you earn?
Yeah, well, thanks, Chris. Right, pay as you earn is the latest thing that we're all thinking a lot about. But yes, public service loan forgiveness and income-based repayment have been near and dear to my heart for quite a while. So we worked really hard to get some of these new programs established. And now the tricky part is just making sure people know about them and understand them well so that they can get the benefits.
Yeah, and that's one thing that we've definitely noticed. Even though every student goes through the entrance counseling and most of them are going through the exit counseling, it doesn't seem that they really do understand all of their different repayment options. And I would say more often than not, they just end up getting put into the standard repayment plan by default since they didn't select anything else. And several of them, even though they've been told 10 different times and 10 different ways, don't even know that other repayment plans exist sometimes. So,
yeah, I think that's right. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate how complicated student loan repayment is. There are so many different repayment options that I think that's part of why people's eyes tend to glaze over, because it's just difficult to keep track of all of the differences. You know, some of the differences are significant, but others of them, you know, are really nuanced. So I think it's hard for even the most sophisticated students and graduates to really know how to figure out what's best for them.
Now, I kind of know a little bit about your background, Heather, but I really want everyone else to kind of hear about what made you so passionate about this topic to lead you to doing the things that you're doing today.
Sure. Well, it started because my sister and I are first-generation college educated. So I came from a family without a lot of money and wanted to go to school. I was always taught, like many of us are, that education is the key to, you know, having a happy and successful life and contributing to society. And so I was thrilled to be able to go to college, and I didn't have any knowledge about finances. I mean, when, you know, I remember that my mother hadn't even gotten her first credit card until maybe just a couple of years before I entered college. So I didn't know anything about debt or investments or income or anything. I knew there was something called financial aid and that was how poor kids managed to pay for college. So I borrowed a whole lot of money and ended up getting a legal degree from Duke University and became an attorney. But by the time I was through with those credentials, I owed $125,000. And, you know, unfortunately, that's a really typical amount of student debt burden for today's professional graduate. But at the time when I did it, it was a little bit kind of cutting edge, you know, because most people managed to not borrow quite as much. So, you know, it was interesting. I found actually that the process of figuring out my loans and dealing with how I could afford to take the positions I wanted to take in public service to be one of the most difficult parts of my education, and one of the trickiest things for me to learn was how to manage all that stuff. So I really understand what it is to have student loans and to, you know, sort of want to make good decisions but not have all the kind of background that enables you to do that. So I've been lucky to be able to, for years now, initially in a nonprofit atmosphere and now with my own training business to be able to help other people figure out the deal with their loans and get them on the right track.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear that you were able to do those kinds of things that you wanted to, even with all of that student loan debt. There's obviously a group of students like you who, you know, they borrow all this money and then they come to find out, well, the job they were planning on doing, the job they really wanted, isn't really going to support those student loan payments. But then you have another set of students who go to a really expensive school or a law program and then halfway through realize that's not even what they wanted to do at all. So We found that out when we were, we kind of knew about that before, but we really found out it was more prevalent as we were going around and interviewing a lot of students about their student loans. And we were doing it specifically for our new entrance and exit counseling that's video-based. So what we found is there was a lot of these students that were just really unhappy that they borrowed all this money and in a program that they didn't even want to complete. And we always kind of urge students to really vet out the course that they are taking and their ideal job that they have in their head, because a lot of times they're just going by what they're kind of told about the position or the field without ever experiencing it firsthand in like an internship type setting.
That's great advice. Yeah, I'm glad you all are able to do that and get that information to students, because you're so right. It's one thing to think you know what a certain profession does. And, you know, like, for example, it reminds me again of my own story. I wanted to be a lawyer. I didn't know any lawyers. No one in our family, you know, had that level of education or profession. And so, you know, I sort of thought, well, hey, on TV, lawyers do a lot of talking and they do a lot of on your feet kind of work. And so I sort of assumed that that was a pretty big part of the profession. Turns out it's not. And there's a whole lot of research and writing that most attorneys do. And that really kind of came as a surprise to me and was not a welcome surprise either.
So currently, I know that you seem to do a lot of stuff on campus for different colleges. Tell us a little bit about what you do for different schools and some of the schools you work with.
Yeah, so I do travel a lot and I go to school campuses, and one of my favorite things to do, and I think one of the things that's most helpful, is to be able to speak directly to groups of students in a kind of a training environment. So have a classroom of students and really talk to them about the ins and outs of some of the complexities of the student loan program. So we talk about the details, for example, of income-based repayment, public service loan forgiveness, and the factors that folks should be thinking about when making decisions about their student loan. So I think that that's really fun and useful, and I do try to make it less, you know, deadly boring than it might otherwise be. So I think that's part of the difficulty of this information, is that it's dry. You know, it isn't exciting necessarily to begin with, so it's important to be really careful about how you present the information and make sure that there's, you know, some lively interaction so that people are engaged and interested in a way that they might not otherwise be. So I do a lot of trainings and speeches, and I also do a fair amount of meeting and advising for university professionals, both within the offices of financial aid and also within public interest advising or faculty and upper-level administration, just to kind of let these folks know both about the realities of student borrowing for their students and graduates, but also to help them understand the nitpicky details of the student loan programs, because those details end up making a whole lot of difference to individuals, and they're difficult to understand unless it's your, you know, full-time job to understand it. And so that's what I've done for myself, is I spend all my time making sure that I know the latest and the important information so that other people can benefit from that.
Okay. In the sessions that you're doing with the students, what's one of the most commonly asked questions that you get in your discussions?
Oh, well, you know, I would say that one thing I get a lot of questions about, especially lately, is student loan consolidation. So consolidation is something that most people have heard of or have an inkling that is something they need to consider, but aren't really sure what the pros and cons of doing that are. And I think it makes sense that that would be a point of confusion, especially right now, because student loan consolidation used to be much more important and a kind of a much more needed tool for managing student debt than it is now. So there have been a number of changes to the student loan programs over the past, say, 10 years that have really made a tremendous difference in consolidation. So folks have tons of questions about what that will do to their interest rate and their repayment options, and consolidation, I think, is always a thorny subject.
Now, one thing I recently heard at a conference I was at is that even with all the changes and the Department of Education really trying to set it up so that every student only has one servicer, from what I'm hearing, it hasn't really worked out the way it was originally planned. I'm still hearing that a very good percentage of students have multiple servicers. Have you heard anything?
Yeah, I hear the same thing. I hear that really quite often. And, you know, I think there's a lot that could be improved about the student loan system, particularly relating to servicing of student loans. You know, I think it's understandable that there would be a lot of kind of growing pains within the system since there's been, you know, significant changes in how the loans are originated or dispersed to students, and also how they are billed and those bills are collected. So I think it's understandable that the system is kind of convoluted, but I also think it's really unfortunate for the students and the graduates and the schools, because student loan servicing is really broken in a lot of ways. I get complaints every day, very serious complaints about problems with the servicing of loans. And as you said, you know, having more than one servicer is one of those problems. And so is getting the information you need as a borrower from the company that's responsible for administering your student loans. And I just think that there's a lot that needs to be done to improve that. And that's really one of the most urgent needs, really, when it comes to financial aid right now.
And, you know, you mentioned that you do a lot of sessions for the actual financial aid administrators from different schools. What would you say is one of the most commonly asked questions or possibly one of the most common misconceptions?
So I get a lot of questions from professionals about the details relating to these income-driven repayment options, including income-based repayment, but also the others, because there's a lot of complexity surrounding what happens if a borrower no longer chooses to stay in that repayment plan or wants to make a change, or, you know, if they have an increase in their income so that they don't have the same kind of debt-to-income ratio they previously had. There's a lot of misinformation about that. I think mainly because the rules are complicated and the terminology surrounding the rules is really, you know, doesn't help clear anything up at all. So I think people are understandably confused that if somebody leaves income-based repayment, what's going to happen? And there's a misconception that the payment is going to immediately jump to some large and unaffordable amount, which is really not the case to the degree that I think people think it is. So I think that's one of the points that I'm most often asked about. And then, you know, public service loan forgiveness also has a number of finer details that people are interested in. For example, which employment counts for public service loan forgiveness, especially when you're talking about some gray areas like international employment or working within a religious institution. There's been a lot of kind of gray areas that we've recently gotten some new clarification on. So I talk about that a fair amount as well.
Okay. And of the schools you're currently working with, is it strictly law schools or do you work with all types of schools?
I work with all types of schools. Most of the information that I focus on is especially important to people who have high student loan balances. And graduate and professional borrowers are always make up a large number of the people in that crowd. So the more, you know, the more education you have, the more years you're in school and the more advanced degrees you pursue, the more opportunity you have to borrow a lot of money. So I do work with a lot of graduate and professional programs, but including law and veterinary and dental, medical, and other graduate programs, especially those that seat a lot of public service positions, so like social work and education. theology. So, and I have done a fair amount of work with undergraduate schools as well, because student borrowing continues to grow among undergrads, and it's a very real and important issue for them as well. But also because there are a number of people who are working on undergraduate degrees who are considering whether or not it makes sense for them to pursue graduate or professional education. And there are a number of things that people can do to kind of help position themselves to launch into that decision with their eyes open and finance that graduate or professional degree in a smarter way than they might if they didn't get that info early in the process.
It's interesting. When schools reach out to you generally, do they usually, is it usually because they've kind of heard some things and they just want you to come out and do this kind of interactive session with their students so that the students can get their questions answered? Or is it more of they have a specific topic that they are having a problem with that they want you to address? Like, for example, what you just mentioned with the undergrads really kind of vetting out whether they should take that next step and go on to a graduate or master's program.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, for me, it's really a combination of the two. So I have many schools that contact me because they see the need and the demand for the information on their campuses. So often it's student groups that are in touch with their administration in order to say, you know, hey, we have questions and we want access to experts who can help us figure this stuff out. So, you know, I'm able to either go to the campuses or provide some online training, which I think is a great way to reach some of these audiences, just because that way folks can stay where they are. It's very cost effective and everything, and a good way to sort of show people what the online resources are as well. But then I do find that there's an increase and really a trend in, you know, trying to help students reflect on their path, their educational path ahead of time. So, which I think is great. I think it's very helpful for people to understand before they start biting off these giant debt burdens that, you know, understand why they're doing it if they choose to do it and sort of what career path they might envision and how that's all going to pan out for them over time. Because I think it's hard. I mean, and especially when we're working with young people, it makes sense that people who haven't lived for a super long time are not always, don't always have all those long-term downstream consequences in mind.
Now, I would imagine that as you're kind of working with these different schools, you probably see some things in place that, and maybe it's not just particular to one school, but maybe it's kind of a system-wide issue, that you think could probably be done a lot better. You know, what's one thing that you would change, whether it's at, you know, a specific school that shall be, you know, or shall remain nameless, or something?
You know, I would say a couple of things. I think a general issue for schools and therefore for their students and graduates is really insufficient emphasis and resources for the financial aid professional. So what I mean by that is that, you know, for example, there are a number of professional schools that share a financial aid office with a larger university. And it's really, I think, unreasonable to expect that people working in a financial aid office that's responsible for undergraduate students as well as graduate and professional students would be able to develop an expertise in the issues that are specific to every one of those kinds of students and grads. You know, I think that people in financial aid offices work very hard and have their hands full securing the aid for the students who are attending the school and helping the students make decisions about financing their education. But I think it's really too much to ask that the same people without greater resources and staffing and training would be also be able to advise people in repayment after they graduate about how to deal with their student loans over the long haul. And there used to be a different support structure for those offices so that they could have, you know, some assistance. And I just feel like the loan servicers and the federal government are not providing everything that the borrowers need. And so I think there's a lot of demand and pressure on schools that they're not well situated to respond to. And unfortunately, then what happens is the students and grads end up with very little advice and information that they can rely upon in order to, you know, make good choices. So I see that as a problem.
Yeah, I would agree with that, not just from the looking at the difference between, you know, an undergraduate and like a law school or a graduate program, but I mean, just in different students at different stages of their life as well. I mean, one reason why we've been so successful on the financial literacy front is because we've realized that there's all kinds of different students out there at various stages of their life, so they can't all be put through one specific learning course that doesn't at least personalize it a little bit to each one of them. Like, just to give an example that I always like to give, this is more financial literacy based, but you know, I look at some of these financial literacy resources, and the first thing they tell a student is how to set up a checking account. And these schools have every single student going through the same experience. So, you know, whether it's a law student or a 46-year-old career changer, they wonder why, and this applies to the exit counseling too, I mean, they wonder why the students aren't grasping and retaining a lot of this information. Well, you know, in the first 30 seconds, you're presenting a concept that they've known for the last 20 years, you'd lose their attention. You know, they think it's just stuff they already know. So, you know, that's one thing that we've realized too with entrance and exit counseling, that we need to start offering different versions of it to basically account for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great because it's true. One size does not fit all, and people are approaching this counseling from a different place, it, you know, in their lives and in their financial decisions and everything else. And so, yeah, you can't, if you're talking down to people or you're talking about concepts that they don't have a foundation to understand, you're doing them a disservice in either way. So there does need to be more personalization. And I'm very excited when there are opportunities for students and grads to get one-on-one training and information. But it's, I think that's, you know, impractical at times or for certain schools in certain situations because there can be a tremendous expense. But I think everybody could benefit from sitting down, you know, with an expert. And there really aren't the appropriate kind of expert out and about. There are a number of financial advisor professionals who are well informed about how to advise people who have money and who have wealth, what to do with that wealth and money. But when you're trying to work with somebody who has education and has debt or is taking those things on, I think it's, you know, there just really isn't a clear path to, you know, who is the professional who would have that information. You know, I mean, if your net worth is negative, as it is for many young people today and older people as well, that you don't need to be learning too much about how the stock market works or what, you know, your investment choices are. You need to learn more about the cost of indebtedness and how to best manage that.
Now, one thing I've noticed that you've, I think it was fairly recent that you started doing them, was the student loan default webinars that were specifically for, I guess, ex-students who either have defaulted on their loans or maybe in danger of defaulting on their loans. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of how things have gone with that?
Yeah, so it's been interesting. I've just been experimenting with it for a little while, Chris, and so I've had, because I know there are lots of people in default on their student loans or behind on their student loan payments, and I also know that there are very significant negative consequences for defaulting. I mean, it's just a nightmare for people and something that's really hard to deal with and that can hurt people for many, many years. And there are great options for staying out of default and even for getting out of default even once it does occur. But unfortunately, those options, like so many of the things in this area, are complicated, convoluted, and, you know, usually hard to access. So I thought, well, what if we provide essentially kind of a self-help roadmap for people and that can be delivered in a way that is, you know, not judgmental and not by their loan collector, because I'm interested in trying to help people help themselves and sort of empower them with information. So started doing some online trainings because that's a cost-effective way to reach people and have done a couple so far. I actually have another one this evening. It's funny that as we're speaking today. And this is just a chance for people to hear me take them through the process that causes defaults or what default means and why it's not good, although many of them already know that, and then focusing on if you do find yourself in a situation of default, what can you do then? Because, you know, there are a couple of different really sensible paths, including something called rehabilitation or also the possibility of consolidating in order to cure a default. And then at that point, it's a lot of people can benefit from these income-driven repayment options that we've talked about. So it really kind of breaks my heart that there are options for people to postpone or reduce their monthly payments and so that they can afford to repay their loans and be on time. But they don't always know about those options or take advantage of those options before they end up in trouble. So I'm hoping to help people get back on track so that they don't have to keep on getting collection calls and, you know, or wage garnishment or tax, you know, refund seizure or whatever it may be.
Well, I think that is the case, that their phone's ringing off the hook and, you know, the last thing they want to do is answer it, even though on the other end is typically organizations that are really trying to help them and kind of walk them through their different options to resolve the matter. You know, I imagine it's similar to like a homeowner that's kind of in the foreclosure process and is getting so many calls about demanding money or trying to market some kind of service to help them get out of it for $10,000 or something. So they don't even want to answer their phone or open their mail at that point. They're kind of giving up. So, I mean, would you say that students not knowing about their different options was one of the biggest eye-openers for you, or was there anything else that you've kind of found out? I know it's still an early project, but is there anything else that you've kind of found out that was kind of eye-opening?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that I was less surprised than I might have been that people weren't aware of all their options. I sort of see that repeatedly, and it is, I think, unfortunate, but I think it's also just, it's not all that unexpected for me. I do think that I have been somewhat surprised at the number of people who just don't know who is on their side or which of the different parties within the system are ones, you know, who have information that they can rely upon. So I think that, you know, as you said, there are more people who are avoiding contact, you know, with various different players within the system who unfortunately don't necessarily understand exactly who all these different players are. So, and it makes sense that they would be confused because, you know, we have lenders, we have guarantors, although the things have, you know, changed, there are agencies that exist, and there are these loan servicers, and then there's a whole industry of third-party debt collectors, and I think sometimes a borrower is lumping everyone in the same category, like, okay, this is a company that's just here to harass me, which, and they may be correct, or they may be wrong, and it may be that, you know, for example, the loan servicer has all the information they need about accessing some of the relief that's available to them if they could just face it. So I think it's, you know, unfortunately kind of part of the human instinct is when we get into trouble, you know, one of our coping mechanisms is just to kind of look the other way or stick our heads in the sand. And unfortunately with student loans, that's like, that ends up making things worse really fast. So I'm glad to be able to provide a kind of a neutral, you know, place, or not even neutral, but, I, you know, people understand and know that I'm really on the side of the student loan borrowers, and I'm not trying to do anything other than help those people do what it is that is best for them. And so, you know, I've been happy to try it out, and then so far it seems like it's going to be popular.
Okay. What would you say as far as whether it's a specific school you were working with or maybe a specific student you were working with, what would you say is one of your most favorite success stories?
Oh, well, I've been happy to work with some schools and students who have really tried to do things differently and who I guess I would call kind of on the cutting edge of these changes we see going forward. So like iGrad, I'm working to educate people, and so are some schools in some innovative ways that I commend. So, for example, I know of schools that have started to identify students who are entering law school who already have substantial amounts of student debt and sit down with those folks, you know, one-on-one. And I have worked with schools who are, you know, really providing assistance on, like, how to make budgets and budgets that are based on future income estimates that are derived from recent data, and as opposed to kind of just guesses or hope, which is much less helpful. So, but I guess sort of one of the things that makes me feel best is when I can speak to students or graduates who, you know, afterwards tell me that, oh, you know, hey, now I feel so much better because I realize that this is going to be okay and that what I really need to do is sit down and get my information together and understand what loans I have and what my repayment options are so that I can make a personal strategy that's going to work best for me, because people really can do that. There's many more good options for student loan borrowers today than there have been in years past. It's just a matter of, you know, sort of getting your head around the idea that you can deal with this debt, and you can figure out what to do, and you can do it. So that always makes me feel good.
Okay. And we are running up on time here, so just the last question I have is, we have a lot of listeners that are financial aid administrators or college administrators. What's the one kind of tool or resource or organization that maybe not a lot of them would know about that's been a huge help to you, whether it's something they can use to kind of educate their students or something they can use to educate themselves or networking, or what's
one? Oh, that's a true. Yeah, that's a terrific question. So there are so many good resources, and I think there are a lot of good ones that are known by people in the profession. But the one that I rely on a tremendous amount that I think is maybe less well known is provided by the National Consumer Law Center, and the website is studentloanborrowerassistance.org. So it's studentloanborrowerassistance.org, and it has the best information about dealing with student loan debt. So this is something for people who have already borrowed, and it tells you very clearly the differences between federal and student loans, the differences between various repayment options, and much detail that's useful for people who have any kind of difficulty with their financial circumstances. So everything about every type of cancellation for loans, whether it be disability or anything else, and deferments, forbearances, and then, you know, really, really detailed, excellent information about default and getting out of default. So what to do if you're having a problem with your student loan. I would highly recommend everything that the National Consumer Law Center does about student loans.
Okay. And I know we kind of got cut short here, so is there anything that we didn't cover that you were hoping to kind of just get in there in the last 30 seconds?
You know, the last thing I would just say is encourage people to really check out the public service loan forgiveness information, because we used to tell people that, you know, maybe you owe so much that you can't afford to take the job you want in public service, even if it doesn't pay well. That's really old-fashioned advice, and it's not the case anymore. So public service loan forgiveness has changed everything, and it's the biggest thing to happen to public service in a generation. And I would encourage folks to look for more info on that. My website, Ask Heather Jarvis, has tons of public service loan forgiveness information.
Yes, that's great advice. And one thing I was going to mention as well is if you have not checked out Heather's site, AskHeatherJarvis.com, make sure to do so. I've noticed there's a lot of great forum questions and answers there, a lot of great resources like PDFs and things that you can use as handouts, and some great kind of ongoing regular courses and webinars that she offers as well. All of that stuff is either free or available at a very nominal cost. And we thank you for joining us on the show, Heather.
Thanks so much, Chris. Always happy to work with you and iGrad.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
You've been listening to iGrad's College Admin Podcast. Visit us at www.igrad.com for more financial literacy and financial aid resources. And subscribe to us on iTunes for more interviews with college trendsetters.